Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Profiles. I'm Paula Schiller. Filmmakers Lenny Kamerling and Sarah Elder direct the Alaska Native Heritage Film Project here at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, but their colleagues include the communities of Tununek and Atka, the residents of St. Lawrence Island, Chinook, and Amonok. Sarah and Lenny make films in villages with the approval, support, and assistance of the communities.
We call these films community-determined films, which means that the people in the community that we film are actively involved in the decision-making of the production. What should be filmed, who should be in it, where it should be filmed, and we pretty much try to stay out of most of those decisions and put those in the hands of the people of the community.
Why would a community in the first place want to be filmed, or how do you choose a community to go into?
That's a good question. A lot of communities don't want to be filmed. We present the idea of what we want to do and show some of our previous films so people could see what these films look like and what our attitude is by seeing these films. And we ask that the people talk it over. We meet with the village council, and we ask that the council meets publicly with the village after we leave, and that they come to a decision, because we feel sometimes by our presence people might feel pressured into making a decision that they might really not want to make.
When you finish these films and take them back to the communities, do they like them?
When we bring them back, it's our... What would you call our most,
It's
judgment day.
It's the reward for all of the work that we and everybody in the village put in. And it's also, judgment day for us. Mm-hmm.
That is more than any other showing, in New York or at film festival or something. The first time we show it in the village, it's terribly nerve-wracking, but so far people have really been delighted by the films and show them over and over in the village where it was made. They have their own copy, and in Gamble they use them to show now to the tourists who visit. They've also used them as testimony in the sea mammal hearings. They have also been used by the Eskimo Caucus at the International Whaling Commission as material for their case. So we feel that the way that they're used shows definitely that people are proud of them.
Lenny had said that when you think of village or a place you might want a film, or you have an idea to go somewhere, you take a previous film and show it, and they have a sense of your attitude toward the subject. What can you describe some of your attitudes that you want people to pick up on when they see the films?
The strongest attitude we have about film is that it should not be from the filmmaker's point of view, but it should be from the people that you're filming. And that has to do with both content and style of a film. The people in the village can determine all of the content, but it can still look like the filmmaker's film. So you have to change your actual style to reflect more the village. And the ways that we do that, probably the most obvious, is that we don't have a white man as a narrator telling you what you're seeing as the film rolls on, and we have exclusively people from the village talking in the film in in subtitles. We also try to keep the film slower than a lot of films that are very zippy and try to reflect the slowness of life in the bush and not have this fast action cutting.
One thing we try to do is encourage the use of the native languages, and all of our films are in the local language and translated with English subtitles. And for a lot of people in the villages, when they see the films, it's the first time that they ever have heard their own language in a film. And that means a lot to people. One of the things that we tell the village councils when we are first talking to them about making a film is that in time the film will have a lot of historical significance because of the rate that things are changing in the bush. And this happened a lot faster than you know we thought. We thought in 20 years things would change so much that the films would be historical documents, but it's happened in 5 years. Many people in the films are old people have passed away now, and this is it's sort of a living testimony to their knowledge and to what they brought to their villages.
And as you would expect, I guess. Well, I hadn't thought about it until it happened, but the older people in every community were more eager to have us film. They could see the benefit of it, whereas the younger people had to sort of think in more political terms first. But the older people immediately said, yes, this must be preserved for history, because their lifetime they had seen what had gone on, and they had the knowledge and the wisdom to see that, in another 20 years, again, everything would be changed. The younger people hadn't seen this yet.
One woman in one of the villages that we worked in, when we asked her if we could talk to her and interview her, she says, yes, please put me in the film because my great-grandchildren will never know how I am and who I am, and I want them to be able to see me and hear me talking.
How do you then, as filmmakers, keep yourselves out of it and make sure it's the old woman talking or the old man talking and not a preconceived notion of what you think an old woman or old man ought to be saying to their grandchildren?
It's always difficult to keep yourself out of it completely, and I don't think that we claim to, but we try to keep ourselves in the background and to be really a listener and observer for such a long time that you can begin to sort out in your own mind what is you and what is the village. And if you know the priority is that the village has to come through, you consciously keep yourself in the background. I think one of the things that helps us to do that the most is that we always stay for a long time in any given place.
How long?
I would say the minimum of our stay is 2 months, and it can go much longer than that. And an average film shoot, I would say, for other filmmakers, is usually 2 weeks. Now, we do not shoot at all the first month, and people from outside film companies and things feel this is awfully wasteful of money. We feel it's the opposite, that we get much richer material. We establish a much greater trust, and we ourselves really get to know who people are and what they're saying by limiting ourselves in that way, by not allowing ourselves to turn the tape recorder on or the movie camera. We spend that month talking to people, and by the end of that month, the old woman can come across more than I can as a filmmaker. And, well, let me say that again. I think that I know her so well that my preconceived notions have been somewhat
erased?
Lessened.
Mm-hmm. When a person first comes to a new village or a new community, the things that you see the first few days that you're there, the things you find interesting when you first get there, like the whaling boats or ivory knives or whatever, are, they stand out. They're very interesting to us because we've never seen them before. But after a month, all of these things sort of fade into the background, and a different part of life there becomes more important. You start to fit into the routine, and we're not we don't stand out anymore as filmmakers that have come mm-hmm. to film there.
One of the things I keep hearing about films made in villages, and it falls into anthropologists going into villages and taking data, people collecting oral histories, that no matter what the intentions are, it does somehow often come out to be exploitive of the people. And I haven't heard your films being accused of that, but it's still a question that does arise. I wonder how you address that.
Well, I think we started with the idea that most work done in villages is exploitive. And from that base, we try to find a way to still record the culture. Ideally, we would like to have a center where we could train native filmmakers and we could step aside, but that's not the reality. So we came up with this method where it was hopefully a joining of two people, our culture, the West culture and native culture, in a way that no exploitation would take place. We're very sensitive to that matter, and we try to put safeguards on ourselves because of that. One of the biggest safeguards we have is that anybody in the village can stop us doing anything at any time and can say, we don't want that in the film, or we don't want you in this area, or we prefer you, or even if they politely say, we would prefer you not to film here without too much pressure on us, we'll immediately stop and leave. And they begin to see that we mean business when we say that, and they begin to tell us more and more, no, we really don't want this in the film, or in Atka, we wanted to film Russian Easter, and the underlying message was, no, we prefer this not to be on film, and so we didn't. So right from the beginning, we never push. That is our main value, is not to push, but to do the opposite of pushing, to just be passive and let stuff come up. Also, we have a large effort to disseminate the films back to native communities, so that this phenomenon of having all the material in museums and cities and anthropology books or whatever does not happen. We have more distribution in the bush here in Alaska than probably, I would say, most other films on Alaska. We also share profits with the village, so that they get the major percent of any profit made on the rental or sale of the films go back to the village where the film was made. So although you can never be sure that it's not exploiting people, it is one of the areas which we try very hard not to.
Why do you do this?
Why do we do it? Because we like to make films, or filmmakers, and because we like to help contribute to helping Native people preserve their culture, and putting this valuable tool, a film, in the hands of the people so that they could record their own culture.
I think it's a challenge as filmmakers. First, Lenny and I were filmmakers, and we saw the challenge that the cultures had never been recorded in a way that was really accurate, authentic. And we felt very much, both of us had spent years teaching in the villages, and the best experiences of our lives we had had in villages. The people there had taught us ways to live in our personal lives, had given us a great gift in attitudes about life and humor and ways to bring up children. And we were moved by the Alaska Native culture, and so we saw it on a professional level as a challenge, and also I think very personally we were very attached to village life.
Sarah Elder and Lenny Kamerling are the directors of the Alaska Native Heritage Film Project. I'm Paula Schiller, and this has been a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Profiles. I'm Paula Schiller. The Festival of Native Arts is an annual event on the University of Alaska campus, but as you'll hear, it's a hard affair to describe because so much of its success depends on the feelings generated at the evening performances and during the entire week's worth of activities, including arts and crafts demonstrations and special afternoon performances for school children. By all accounts, the festival is a major happening in the state, with dancers, singers, and artists coming in from every region, and it's all student-run. So speaking on behalf of the university students who work on the festival, our chief financial wizard, John Oscar, from Tununuk, and chairperson for the past 2 years, Jim Stevens from Eagle.
I think one of the neatest things about the whole festival is that it is student-run. I mean, it's a spectacular production. No, it's hard to imagine how anything like this is ever put together. Last year, I was pretty amazed by the way it came together myself. You know, I was running the show. But it's the dedication of the students to put on the show. It just makes it, you know, so fabulous, makes it what it is. If we organize into a company or an organization, it'd lose all of its magic because we'd have administrators and channels to go through. And we don't have that now. We decide everything as a group, and I'm the chairperson. I want to be chairman, but they don't recommend me chairperson. And I implement their decisions. I mean, and it is the student's decision. We try not to get too pressured by it.
How much does it cost to do something like this?
We've been...
We anticipated exceeding $49,000, close to $50,000 this year. That's been the anticipated project budget that we had figured out. And last year's anticipation in fiscal year of 80, we had a figure of $48,931. That's how much it costed us. And there's been some problems with time, basically, trying to get some funds and contributions, donations from regional corporations, village corporations, small businesses, oil corporations, and individuals and families from various groups and organizations.
And, you asked us earlier, like, when does the festival start? When do we start each year? And that's sort of like asking which comes first, the chicken or the egg.
Yeah, because the money or the idea.
Right, because, well, right after the festival is over with this year, we got to start in on next year's festival because the various funding agencies, they have deadlines that are usually in June or July, which means we've got quite a bit of dedicated students, but it just really exhausts them. The festival week is just nerve-wracking. It just really runs you into the ground. And then they always hate me when I say, okay, we got to do some more work next week, you know, after they've just finished the festival. And so
The Festival Native Arts is comprised of students who volunteer their time. There's an estimated between 30 to 50 students who participate volunteering their time with the festival, and we estimate 2,000 hours in two semesters.
How many performers or participants, artists and dancers, musicians are...
We anticipated 140 people.
For this year. Last year we had over 200. But it's all money related.
Mm-hmm.
If we get more money, we can invite more people.
It still seems like a tremendous logistics problem for... it seems hard to get 50 students together to do any one thing at any given time. That's got to be a problem. And then for those 50 people to handle those 100 people, it's got to be equally hard.
Yeah, as long as there's one major person as a contact person and relaying information back and forth, plus assigning projects to each individual to do an assignment and meeting up our deadlines.
But we're getting better at it every year.
Yes.
When it started back in 1973, I think that's, yes, 1973, there was a real void on campus culturally. And the students took it upon themselves to fill that void. And it's just been growing ever since. And we're all really proud of what we're able to do. Without, I mean, the university, I would be the last person to put the university down for what they do. They do a lot of help for us. You know, they give us space and they give us support personnel, and they're pretty much our leader. But other than that, it's our baby, and it's something we're proud of, and it's something we want to keep that way.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have anybody on a salary. We don't have any salary positions. All of our money goes to bringing in people.
Are you managing to get any academic credit out of this at all?
This semester, for the first time, you're able to sign up for classes through the Native Studies program. And it's a cultural practicum class, and you can sign up for 1 to 3 credits.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something we've always been kicking around every year. Why don't we get credit for it? And this semester, finally, we are.
There's a lot of organizational benefits to the student that are run within internally in the Festival of Native Arts. The procedures of going through so many hours organizing it and budgeting and finding out what kind of expenses we're going to be faced with through our transactions and our planning.
And all decisions are always made in the context of a meeting. And it's giving the students really hands-on experience of dealing, you know, with other people in a meeting situation and trying to get something resolved. Like the other day, we had a, I'm not going to call it an argument, we had a discussion on the merits of whether we should finally charge at the door, because traditionally, it's always been free to the public. And we're thinking, well, maybe we should just charge them $1 because we're so short of money. And that's a good way to raise $2,000. But we decided, no, we got to stay with tradition.
It would also inhibit general participation to come to the festival. That having that concept, we decided not to have admission.
Mm-hmm. Why do you guys do it? Or why do the 50 or so students do it?
It's a spiritual pride that exists within us. It's also a source of identification that we bring together to Fairbanks from various regions up in the north, the Inupiaq group and Yupik groups, the Aleut, Tsimshians, Athabascans, and other various cultural groups that we bring to Fairbanks. Not only that, it's a sense of moral, spiritual identity that I can identify myself to in this rapid changing world of ours. And it's also, it requires more effort to preserve an identity that has been handed down through generations in this age of ours.
And why bring it into Fairbanks? Is it you're bringing it for yourselves so you can see each other's cultures, or you bring it for the
general public,
Fairbanks community?
Students.
Yeah, there's nobody really knows the difference between Yupiks and Inupiaqs. They're all Eskimos to, you know, those that don't really
know. I have
know.
Had some people from outside of the state come to me who are not natives, saying that it is very nice and it is something that they have not ever seen before outside of the state, where various cultures are participating in one big festivity.
I really enjoy working on it. It gives me something to do outside. It's not academic. It's a nice break from the books to begin with, because you got to have something else to do. All right. And then I think back on last year, this old man about 78 or 80 years old from Kodiak. He was out there, and everybody was out there taking his picture. And all of a sudden, he just stands up, and he runs off the stage, and I'm just going, uh-oh, what is it, heart attack or something like this? And he comes back with his Polaroid Pronto camera and points it at the audience and takes a picture, you know? And it's just little things like that really make it all worthwhile, to see the young people coming in from the villages and perform and see that, you know, what they're doing is appreciated. Because that, I mean, it's really hard to get appreciation, you know, for being Native. You know, everybody thinks it's really neat. But it's a visible thing at the festival. People say, you know, they really do appreciate what we're doing, and it's really neat that
and they
young
see a portion of the activities they see. They see a portion of what's been handed down through generations before, way before your grandparent was born.
One of the problems we've had in the past that we're hopefully going to correct this year is that when the dancers get up, a lot of people in general public don't really understand what's going on. All they see is dancers, and they don't understand either the significance of it or not. But we're going to work on it this year and try to make it more instructional so that the audience will come away with a better feeling towards it.
I'd like to know a little more about the how you can tell that people appreciate it. Maybe for people that haven't been to the festival or have thought, well, you know, it wouldn't be anything in it for me. Could you describe what, you know, what happens with the audience and how it's set up and maybe what it is you like best about it if you were sitting in the audience?
If nobody's ever been to the Festival of Native Arts before, it's an experience that's really hard to describe to begin with, because you have, well, first of all, you're shocked by there's five different ethnic groups that we identify in the state, and that there is a difference between each, and it's just, it's really interesting to watch and see what the differences are, and that the music and the singing and the dancing, it grips you. It really does. And we also have, like, during the evenings, at least once an evening, we have invitational dances where anybody from the public can come up, you know. And then we also have, like, sometimes on stage we have the blanket toss. And we try to get people who've never been tossed before in a blanket up there, you know, just to see what it's like, see how high they can get up there.
It's like a big celebration that we present, a sense of cultural pride that these participants give to the general public, celebrating that we are what we are presenting. Part of what we're presenting is our pride, our cultural heritage.
I mean, we'd like to just expand everybody's awareness, you know, and the month of March is a hell of a month for that, because, you know, and you got in Juneau, you have First American Emphasis Week. In Anchorage, they're having a Native American Emphasis Week, the same week as the festival. Then we have the Festival of Native Arts, and there's the North American Dog Mushing Championship. Tanana Chiefs has their convention. This whole town just, it's like a great big village.
Mm-hmm. And the sun's staying up.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's really nice, is the sun's starting to come out again.
Jim Stevens is chairman of this year's Festival of Native Arts, and John Oscar is the financial contact person and cost analyst. They are two of the many Native students who will be too busy to pay attention to sunshine during the week-long Festival of Native Arts. For Chinook, I'm Paula Schuller, and this has been a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.